there was a very great earthquake in the days of Uzziah, king of Judah, my dear brethren and sisters. Clearly it was an earthquake of tremendous proportion, because Zechariah quoted it to describe the earthquake which will occur in the day when the feet of Jesus will stand upon the Mount of Olives. Obviously then it was still recalled by the people in Zechariah's day, although nearly 250 years had elapsed since the days of Uzziah. According to Josephus, it was a tremendous, it caused a great deal of damage and loss of life. And again, according to Josephus, it occurred at the time when Uzziah presumed to offer incense, as a result of which he became a leper. Now there is no scriptural evidence to link those two events, and there is no record of this earthquake at all in the books of Kings and Chronicles. But it would seem to be fitting that it should occur at that time. But this earthquake is the background to the prophecy of Amos, which we have just finished reading this afternoon. If we go right to the beginning of that prophecy, to the first chapter, we see that he mentions this earthquake. Amos chapter 1 and verse 1. The words of Amos, who was among the herdmen of Tekoa, which he saw concerning Israel in the days of Uzziah, king of Judah, and in the days of Jeroboam, the son of Joash, king of Israel, 2 years before the earthquake. That was when he began his work of prophecy, 2 years before the earthquake. When he comes to the ninth chapter, he reaches the climax of his message. And the language of this ninth chapter, which we have just read together, would seem to coincide with the earthquake. We just read again that first verse, chapter 9. I saw the Lord standing upon the altar, and he said, "Smite the lintel of the door, that the posts may shake, and cut them in the head, all of them, and I will slay the last of them with the sword. He that fleeth of them shall not flee away, and he that escapeth of them shall not be delivered." The smiting of the lintel, the shaking of the post, could very well be descriptive of this earthquake, and also the subsequent mention of "he that fleeth" and "he that escapeth." And then the prophet goes on to consider further judgments upon the people, but concludes his message, his prophecy, with a message of redemption, a message which commences with the raising up of the tabernacle of David. And it is that which is our hope, is it not, brethren and sisters, that we may see the raising up of the tabernacle of David. It is indeed from the emblems upon the table which we are met around this afternoon that we see the way in which it will be raised up. Now that expression, the tabernacle of David, is a very interesting expression. It's an expression which only occurs on two other occasions in the whole of Scripture. It occurs in Acts chapter 15, when James quotes these words at the Council of Jerusalem, to which we will refer a little later. It also occurs in Isaiah chapter 16, which also we will refer to a little later on. But on that occasion, the word which is translated tabernacle is different from the one which we have here. Now here, in Amos, the word which is translated tabernacle is the Hebrew word sukkah, and it means a booth. The word is never used in respect of the tabernacle in the wilderness, but is the word which is always used for the Feast of Tabernacles, when the children of Israel had to dwell in booths constructed from the branches of various trees. Now the word here in Amos is in the feminine gender. If we go to Psalm 76, we find an interesting use of the masculine form of this word. Psalm 76 and verse 1. "In Judah is God known, his name is great in Israel. In Salem also is his tabernacle, and his dwelling place in Zion." In Salem also is his booth and his dwelling place in Zion. Now the only time that Yahweh could be said to have dwelt in a booth in Zion was after David had brought the ark to Zion, until the time that Solomon had built the temple. Because of course at that time the ark was taken out of the tabernacle which David had built and put into the temple. Then if you go to the second book of Samuel and the 11th chapter, following the record of David's adultery with Bathsheba, when you remember he desired Uriah to spend the night in his own house in order to cover his sin, we read there 2 Samuel 11 and verse 11, "And Uriah said unto David, The ark and Israel and Judah abide in tents." And again it is the word Sukkah, booths. And if we go to 1 Chronicles chapter 15, we read of David bringing the ark to Zion. But here it is a different word which is used. You see that Uriah referred to the ark dwelling in a booth, the same word which Amos used in chapter 9. But if we go to 1 Chronicles 15 and verse 1, "And David made him houses in the city of David, and prepared a place for the ark of God, and pitched for it a tent." And again in the 16th chapter and the first verse, "So they brought the ark of God and set it in the midst of the tent that David had pitched for it, and they offered burnt sacrifices and peace offerings before God." And in those two occasions, the Hebrew word is ohel, the word used in Isaiah 16 to describe the tabernacle of David, and one of the words used for the tabernacle in the wilderness, although the primary word for that purpose is the word Mishkan. And that word is never used for the tabernacle that David pitched in Zion. The Mishkan, in fact, was never erected in Zion. But as we know, it moved from Shiloh to Nob, finally to Gibeah, where it was at the beginning of the reign of Solomon. And if we go to Psalm 78, we read why it was that the Mishkan was never erected in Zion. Psalm 78 and verse 58. "For they provoked him to anger with their high places, and moved him to jealousy with their graven images. When God heard this, he was wroth and greatly abhorred Israel, so that he forsook the tabernacle of Shiloh, the tent which he placed among men." Verse 67. "Moreover, he refused the tabernacle of Joseph, and chose not the tribe of Ephraim, but chose the tribe of Judah, the Mount Zion, which he loved." So the tabernacle of David then is primarily a reference to the tent which David pitched in Zion for the Ark of God. Now we are not told what happened to it when Solomon had removed the Ark into the temple, but we suggest it is not unlikely that it would have remained in Zion as a fitting memorial to the work of David until the earthquake in the days of Uzziah, when it was broken down. But, says Amos, "During the tabernacle of David that is fallen, Yahweh will raise it up again." Not literally, of course, but that which was represented by the tabernacle of David would be restored. And so we will have a look then at 1 Chronicles 15 and 16 in a few moments' time to see what is represented. But first of all, let us consider for a moment or two the religious position in Israel at this time. We observe that conditions in the land from a spiritual point of view were very different from what we might have expected. David brought the ark to Zion nearly 21 years after it had been captured by the Philistines at the death of Eli, and for all of this time it had not been in the most holy place of the tabernacle. Clearly Samuel must have known those words which we have read in Psalm 78, although they were not actually recorded at that time, but Yahweh must have revealed to Samuel that Yahweh had forsaken the tabernacle of Shiloh and had chosen Zion. Of course, it was not possible at the time of Samuel for the ark to be taken to Zion. And the effect of this was devastating upon the religious life in Israel. Because if there was no ark or no mercy seat in the most holy place, then it was impossible to keep the Day of Atonement. There were no means by which the national sins of Israel could be forgiven. No forgiveness for Israel for the whole of that time in the way that it was appointed under the law. And the main function of the high priest himself could not be completely fulfilled. For that was his principal task, was it not? One day of the year to pass beyond the veil into the most holy, to sprinkle the blood upon the mercy seat. But the mercy seat was not there. The blood of the atonement could not be sprinkled. Then, 1 Chronicles chapter 16, we read of the state of affairs after the ark had come to Zion. And again, it is not perhaps what we would have expected. 1 Chronicles 16 and verse 37. So he, that is David, left there before the ark of the covenant of Yahweh, Asaph and his brethren to minister before the ark continually as every day's work required, and Obed-Edom with their brethren 80, Obed-Edom also the son of Jeduthun and Hosah to be porters, and Zadok the priest and his brethren the priests before the tabernacle of Yahweh in the high place that was at Gibeon. So there was left in Zion, around the tabernacle which David had pitched, a large company of Levites under the charge of Asaph, and their work was to minister before the ark continually at every day's work required. But the high priest remained with the tabernacle which had come through the wilderness, and that was now at Gibeon. And so we have a situation where the high priest is separated from the ark. Still, it was impossible for the Day of Atonement to be kept. There remained no national forgiveness for Israel. Not surprising, we might think. We would have thought that when David had the opportunity, all those things of the law would have been reconstituted. But that was not so. All the offerings according to the law were still made in the tabernacle. Presumably, incense was offered upon the golden altar. But the smoke of that incense would have passed through the veil into a most holy place, which Yahweh had forsaken. The prayers of Israel then, surely, were in time for an answer. But what, we wonder, was the work required every day for the Ark of the Covenant, which required that large company of people under Asaph to be kept in Zion? Under the law, there was only work for one day in the year, and that had to be done by the high priest, and the high priest wasn't even amongst them. So what was all the work which these people had to do around the tabernacle of David in Zion? We also observe that that two people here are named as porters. Same word, Hebrew word, is found in chapter 15, where it's translated doorkeepers, verse 23. Berechiah and Elkanah were doorkeepers for the ark, and Shebaniah and Jehoshaphat and Nethaneel and Amasiah and Zechariah and Benaiah and Eleazar the priest did blow the trumpets before the ark of God, and Obed-Edom and Jehiah were doorkeepers for the ark. As doorkeepers have two functions, do they not? One of those is to keep undesirable people out by ensuring that the door remains shut. The other is to open the doors to admit those entitled to enter. The very interesting fact is that the Hebrew word here, which is translated doorkeeper, comes from a root meaning to open. So the principal function of those doorkeepers then was to admit those who could be admitted. But who could be admitted into that tabernacle where the ark was kept. I think there was a large number of people kept around that, in that, around that tabernacle. Must have been considerable amount of work to be done. Everybody noted that the chief of the Levites appointed to minister to the ark was Asaph, a man who was later chosen by David to be the chief of those who would prophesy with instruments of music. 12 psalms are attributed to Asaph, including those two which we have already quoted from. So from these various testimonies, it would seem that the Ark of the Covenant played a very different part in the spiritual life of Israel during the time that David ruled in Zion from what he did at any other time, either before or since. It wasn't behind that veil in the most holy place, accessible only by the smoke of the incense, except for the high priest one day a year. Rather, it would seem, was it open for the faithful worshippers through the medium of the singing of psalms, accessible through prayer itself, rather than that which was typical of prayer. Then let us still in 1 Chronicles 15 look at the part that David himself played in the bringing of the ark to Zion. 1 Chronicles 15, verse 25. So David and the elders of Israel and the captains over thousands went to bring up the ark of the covenant of Yahweh out of the house of Obed-Edom with joy. And it came to pass, when God helped the Levites that bear the ark of the covenant of Yahweh, that they offered 7 bullocks and 7 rams. And David was clothed with a robe of fine linen, and all the Levites that bear the ark, and the singers, and Kenaniah, the master of the song of the singers, David also had upon him an ephod of linen. So David was clothed in a robe of fine linen, and also in an ephod of linen. But those two words, linen in that verse, are from different Hebrew words. The first word literally means to bleach, and reference rather to the whiteness, rather than the material from which it was made. That word is not found anywhere in the law. It is in fact only its second occurrence in scripture, but it's found extensively in connection with Solomon's temple. The linen used in the tabernacle in the wilderness had been brought from Egypt, part of those things by which the children of Israel spoiled the Egyptians at the time of the Exodus. This linen had its first occurrence in 1 Chronicles chapter 4 tells us, was linen produced in Israel. The second word describes the ephod, a priestly garment. And this word for linen is used only in 2 connections in the law: the priest's linen breeches and the special garment which the priest wore on the Day of Atonement. Let me go over to chapter 16 and the first verse. So they brought the ark of God and set it in the midst of the tent that David had pitched for it, and they offered burnt sacrifices and peace offerings before God. And when David had made an end of offering the burnt offerings and the peace offerings, he blessed the people in the name of Yahweh, and he dealt to every one of Israel, both man and woman, to every one a loaf of bread, and a good piece of flesh, and a flagon of wine. So we notice that David made the offering, and that then he distributed bread and wine amongst the people. Now David was not usurping the position of the priest, as Isaiah was later to do, by his action when he attempted to offer incense. But rather was he foreshadowing the work of the priest of the order of Melchizedek, and he would come to make the perfect atonement for Israel after this day. And this Christ was to do once, when he was offered upon the stake. And David did this only once, when the ark came to Zion. When Christ was offered, the veil was rent, opening the way into the most holy for the faithful of Israel after this day. And we await today, do we not, friends, when Christ, the anti-typical ark, comes to Zion accompanied by the song of the living. And then, beginning in 1 Chronicles 16, we read that at the end of this time, David delivered a psalm. There are some features of this psalm which we will look at. David reminds the people of the covenant. Verse 15. Be ye mindful always of his covenant, the word which he commanded to a thousand generations, even of the covenant which he made with Abraham under his oath unto Isaac, and hath confirmed the same to Jacob for a law to Israel for an everlasting covenant. But of course that covenant is the foundation of the hope of redemption, that which we remember this afternoon in the bread and the wine. For the foundation of the hope of Israel. Verse 23. Sing unto Yahweh all the earth. Show forth from day to day his salvation. Declare his glory among the heathen, his marvellous works among all nations. Salvation of Yahweh then was not confined to Israel, but it was to be declared amongst all nations. Verse 29. Give unto Yahweh the glory due unto his name. Bring an offering and come before him. Worship Yahweh in the beauty of holiness. Fear before him all the earth. The world also shall be stable, that it be not moved. Let the heavens be glad, and let the earth rejoice. And let men say among the nations, Yahweh reigneth. Wasn't only in Israel that Yahweh reigned, but all nations were to be told that Yahweh reigned. Indeed, his dominion is to cover the earth in the day when the tabernacle of David is raised up again. So, in type, in this incident, when David brought the ark to Zion, we see surely Yahweh himself enthroned in Zion, enthroned within that booth, within the tabernacle of David. The tabernacle of David, then, represents the kingdom of Israel restored. A kingdom ruled not simply by the law of Moses, which was to be fulfilled, but a kingdom constituted under the covenant which Yahweh made with Abraham. A kingdom which will include all Jews and Gentiles who put their faith in the Messiah of Israel. The next chapter in 1 Chronicles records David's desire to build a house for Yahweh. The tent he had provided, this booth, was a temporary structure. Now he wished to build a permanent house. Yahweh's will was not that he should do so. Instead, we read that he made his covenant with David, the terms of which are so very familiar to us. And this is followed immediately by two conquests. Chapter 18, verse 1. Now after this, after Yahweh had made his covenant with David, it came to pass that David smote the Philistines and subdued them, and took Gath and her towns out of the hand of the Philistines, and he smote Moab, and the Moabites became David's servants and bought gifts. So the Moabites bought David gifts. Now go to the fourth chapter, the first book of Chronicles. Here we have the first reference to that fine linen which was worn by David. We read how it was produced in Israel. 1 Chronicles chapter 4 and verse 21. The sons of Shelah the son of Judah were the father of Lekah, and Laadah the father of Marishah. And the families of the house of them that wrought fine linen of the house of Ashbi. And Jochim and the men of Kozeba and Joash and Sarath, who had the dominion in Moab, and Jeshubai-Lehem. And these are ancient things. So the family then, which produced the fine linen which was worn by David when he took the ark to Zion, also provided those who were placed in authority in Moab after David had conquered it. And Isaiah chapter 16, which contains the only other reference in the Old Testament to the tabernacle of David, is in the context of the burden of Moab. Isaiah chapter 16 and the first verse. Send ye the lamb to the ruler of the land from Selah to the wilderness, unto the mount of the daughter of Zion. For it shall be that as a wandering bird cast out of the nest, so the daughters of Moab shall be at the forge of Arnon. Take counsel, execute judgment, make thy shadow as the night in the midst of the noonday, hide the outcast, bewray not him that wandereth. Let mine outcasts dwell with thee, Moab. Be thou a covert to them from the face of the spoiler, for the extortion is at an end, the spoiler ceaseth, the oppressors are consumed out of the land, and in mercy shall the throne be established, and he shall sit upon it in truth in the tabernacle of David, judging and seeking judgment and hasting righteousness. Here, brethren and sisters, is a prophecy which we expect soon to see fulfilled, do we not? When the people of Israel flee from the invasion of Gog, they will flee eastward to dwell as outcasts in Moab. But then Christ and the saints will come to the salvation of Israel, and Moab will come under the dominion of the Son of David, who will sit on it in truth in the tabernacle of David. In Old Testament times, Moab was noted for its sheep. And no doubt, the gift sent to David would have included sheep, the lamb sent to the ruler of the land, as we see in the first verse of that chapter, and to the mount of the daughter of Zion. We are told quite specifically in later years, many lambs were sent to Ahab from the king of Moab when it came under his control. No doubt it had continued from the days of David when the kingdom was divided. Moab must have come under the control of the northern kingdom. So Ahab received these lambs. In the age to come, when the kingdom is restored, gifts will again be sent to the ruler in Zion. They will be sent to the king sitting upon the throne in the tabernacle of David. Let's go back then to our Amos chapter 9, to his prophecy of the raising up of the tabernacle of David. The situation which we have seen existed in David's reign could not last. David was a man after Yahweh's own heart. David was the beloved of Yahweh. While he reigned, Israel could be taken forward in time to the millennial age. But his son, although he started well, and although the glories of the kingdom came to be manifested in his time, could not rise to his father's spiritual height. So the restrictions of the law were fully restored. The ark was once more placed beyond the veil. National forgiveness on the Day of Atonement was reinstituted. The memorial, he suggests, of the tabernacle of David remains there in Zion until one of his successors presumed to have usurped the position of the priest, and then it fell. But it will be restored, and the nations which are called by Yahweh's name will be able to approach it. Verse 11, again, Amos 9. In that day will I raise up the tabernacle of David that is fallen, and close up the breaches thereof, and I will raise up his ruins, and I will build it as in the days of old, that they may possess the remnant of Edom and of all the heathen which are called by my name, saith Yahweh that doeth. But let's go to Acts chapter 15. Let's come to the conference at Jerusalem. The Gentiles had now been brought into the ecclesia, just as that psalm which David first sung on the day that he took the ark to Zion had prophesied. Gentiles had been brought into the ecclesia, but some believed that they should keep the law of Moses. But when the son of David died as a sacrifice for sin, the veil was rent. The way to the ark of the covenant was now open. And this prepared the way for the raising again of the tabernacle of David. So James concludes this debate by quoting Amos chapter 9, Acts 15, verse 13. And after they had held their peace, James answered, saying, Men and brethren, hearken unto me. Simeon hath declared how God at the first did visit the Gentiles to take out of them a people for his name. And to this agree the words of the prophets, that it is written, After this I will return and will build again the tabernacle of David which is fallen down, and I will build again the ruins thereof, and I will set it up, that the residue of men might seek after the Lord, and all the Gentiles upon whom my name is called, saith the Lord, who doeth all these things. So in the age to come then, those spiritual conditions which applied in the days when David ruled in Zion, they will be restored. They will be perfected. All nations which have accepted Christ will be able to seek after Yahweh, and they will find redemption, a redemption beyond the scope of the law of Moses. An annual day of atonement will not be required. We do not find that mentioned amongst the restored sacrifices when the temple of Ezekiel's prophecy is built. There is no more of a day of atonement. The one offering of Jesus being sufficient to cover the sins of the faithful. Those from among the Gentiles who accepted Christ in then were not to be bound by the law of Moses. Jesus had fulfilled those things in his death. So, remember, the apostles declared it was not necessary that they should keep the law. And we, brethren and sisters, we are amongst the Gentiles who have accepted Christ. We have put our faith in the tabernacle of David. We are covered by the fine white linen produced by one of Israel of the tribe of Judah. We are covered by the atonement which he achieved, and we are able to approach the throne of grace by prayer through him. We can worship Yahweh through him by the singing of psalms and spiritual songs. We rejoice him before him in the knowledge that Yahweh reigns. David provided the people with bread and wine. Brethren and sisters, we now have bread and wine upon the table before us, provided by Jesus before he offered. So as we take these things, we will remember his work of sacrifice. We will remember the hope of redemption in him, and we will be encouraged to live in a way acceptable to him. In the last years of David's life, he made provision for the temple to be erected by Solomon. And amongst that provision, he appointed 24 orders of priests of the sons of Zadok and Ahimelech. And he also appointed 24 orders of singers under Asaph, that one who had been given charge of the tabernacle in Zion. And in the fifth chapter of the Apocalypse, we read of 24 elders singing a new song in the day when the tabernacle of David has been raised up again. Apocalypse chapter 5 and verse 8. And when he had taken the book, the four living ones and 24 elders fell down before the Lamb, having every one of them harps and golden vials full of odours, which are the prayers of saints. And they sung a new song, saying, Thou art worthy to take the book and to open the seals thereof, for thou wast slain and hast redeemed us to God by thy blood out of every kindred and tongue and people and nation, and hast made us unto our God kings and priests, and we shall reign on the earth. And I beheld, and I heard the voice of many angels round about the throne, and the living ones and the elders. And the number of them was 10,000 times 10,000 and thousands of thousands, saying with a loud voice, Worthy is the Lamb that was slain to receive power and riches and wisdom and strength and honour and glory and blessing. and every creature which is in heaven and on the earth and under the earth, and such as are in the sea and all that are in them, heard I saying, Blessing and honour and glory and power be unto him that sits upon the throne, and unto the Lamb for ever and ever. The four living ones said, Amen. And the 24 elders fell down and worshipped him that liveth for ever and ever. May it be, brethren, that each one of us may be found worthy to be amongst that company, having the ministration of the tabernacle of David in that glorious millennial age. The waters to boil, to make thy name known to an adversary, that the nations may tremble at thy presence. And here the political heavens are not to be merely bound, but to be rent, to be torn apart. And in their place, as the next chapter reveals, there will be a new heaven and earth. And again, the principle is the same. Judgment upon the wicked, that the righteous may be blessed and enter into their inheritance. And during most of her history, Israel has been at enmity with Egypt, although from time to time she has looked to Egypt for protection. This was the case in the days of Hezekiah, as you read in Isaiah chapter 31, and Israel was threatened from the north. And they were counseled not to look to Egypt for help. At the present time, there is peace between Israel and Egypt, and it may well be that they will turn to Egypt again, but they will look in vain, as they did in the days of Hezekiah, chapter 31 of Isaiah, verse 3. Now the Egyptians are men and not God, and their horses flesh and not spirit. When Yahweh shall stretch out his hand, both he that helpeth shall fall, and he that is holpen shall fall down, and they all shall fall together. But their help will come from Yahweh. Verse 4. For thus hath Yahweh spoken unto me, Like as the lion and the young lion roaring on his prey, when a multitude of shepherds is called forth against him, he will not be afraid of their voice, nor abase himself for the noise of them. So shall Yahweh of hosts Yerahat to fight for Mount Zion and for the hill thereof. Have a compact title of deity here, Yahweh surveyor Yerahat. Sir Alan will expound at length on the first part of this later today. So we see here that Yahweh manifest in the saints, comprising his armies, will descend upon the northern invader, the latter day Assyria. Here we see the descent from Sinai of Christ and the saints to fight for Zion. Verse 5. As birds flying, so will Yahweh of hosts defend Jerusalem. Defending also, he will deliver it. Passing over, he will preserve it. So Israel will be defended, be hedged about. It will be delivered. He will snatch it away from the enemy. And he will preserve Jerusalem, rescue it to be the city of his throne in the age to come. And then will the work of Yahweh Yireh be complete for the current era. Flesh has been judged, the justified are preserved. But there remains a further coming down at the conclusion of the millennium. So if we go to the 21st chapter of Revelation, we read of this final descent. Revelation 21 and verse 1. And I saw a new heaven and a new earth. For the first heaven and the first earth were passed away, and there was no more sea. And I, John, saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down from God out of heaven, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. And I heard a great voice out of heaven saying, Behold, the tabernacle of God is with men, and he will dwell with them, and they shall be his people, and God himself shall be with them and be their God, and God shall wipe away all tears from their eyes, and there shall be no more death. Neither sorrow nor crying, neither shall there be any more pain, for the former things are passed away. No thunders and lightnings on this occasion. No smoke than the voice of a trumpet. The work of judgment is complete. Yahweh is now manifest in a multitude,
inhabiting the earth, showing forth the glories of his name. May it be, brothers and sisters, that we shall be amongst them.